And welcome back to another episode of The Conspiracy Skeptic. I'm your conspiracy skeptic, Carl Maimer. And Dr. Perlmutter, can I call you David?
If I can call you Sir Carl, I understand the Idris Elba was just knighted and you were 67 on the list and you didn't get as much attention as him. So exactly. I will just call you Sir Carl and you can call me David.
The right honorable Carl Maimer. Great. Okay. And yes. So I, in keeping with that theme of awards and honors, I think you are being deputized this show as a co-host because we have a special guest. Julie, can I use your last name?
Oh yes, yeah, go for it.
Great,
go
Julie Brennan.
Brennan,
mm-hmm. Brennan, great. Okay, Julie Brennan. My high school was Brennan, so if I can't accidentally call you Brennan,
they're cousins Brennan. Of the family. So
yes, exactly. Julie Brennan, right? But you are you not an employee, or are you not? You know, is you know my good friend David? Is he your advisor, or
we just work in the same place.
So. Oh, we work, okay. Yeah. So I am. I'm a staff member.
Okay.
Also a media student. I'm a grad student, and going on my own scholarly journey.
Oh, great. Okay. now, my good friend David, co-host of The Conspiracy Skeptic, is it okay if Julie calls you just for the show, David, or must she refer to you as Dr. Perlmutter?
We're all part of the same hive.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes,
so we don't make distinctions of class or any race, gender, anything.
Perfect. Yeah. That's a good segue into our topic. I believe you, David, you emailed me, because I think maybe you saw my Facebook, I just couldn't shut up about Pluribus, and then you were like, I think you said you have an associate, Julie, who also likes Pluribus, and I imagine you, David, like Pluribus, and then like, why don't we do all a show together about Pluribus and talk about kind of the conspiracy, how it relates to kind of conspiracy theories, and you know, other whatever other ramblings we care to proceed to. And I'm like, that's awesome. And then, So, Julie, as the guest, I wanted to give you the honor of, for the listeners, and I got to warn you, if you have not seen the show or you've not seen all of the show, just tune out now. Go,
This is not spoiler free.
Exactly. go find a YouTube video at Mermaids or something. Sorry. Just call back to something I was talking to Julie earlier. But So just go away. You have to have watched the whole series, season one. But Could you sort of describe, how would you describe Pluribus? Because I call it a very Canadian zombie apocalypse. That's my tagline. But what how would you describe Pluribus?
So I wouldn't go zombie apocalypse. I would go alien invasion. Alien invasion turns itself. It's not a loss of identity. It's a little bit of a conformity horror. It's a little bit of a conspiracy issue. It's all in the realm of Borg and body snatchers, but mm-hmm. with some fun twists in there. That's where I'd place it, at least.
But
whereas zombies are more mindless, this is absolutely like far above it. You have a great mind, but you don't you don't have individuality,
right? When you look at my show The Conspiracy Skeptic, I think someplace in the tags, it's like the show is created by the Hive Mind. Yes. That was my dream corporation way back when I was in high school. I'm like, man, if I ever start my own think tank or corporation, I'm calling it the Hive Mind Group. So I've just always So kind of weird. It's all come around, but
It's how
yeah.
I refer to my friend group whenever I need their opinions. I message my big friend chat and go, "All right, hive mind."
Exactly. So yeah. So and also before we start again, because I'm Canadian, obviously pluribus to me seems to be a reference to an American, not a slogan, a motto, e pluribus
Yeah.
unum. Yeah. What does that actually mean?
So is it? It's in many we are one, or in many we are united. If I remember that right.
Okay.
But we. Let's see. The in many we are one. Or in many we are united. For me, that's very much. I would, oh, what did I talk about in our little email exchange?
Right.
That was a fun one. I'm sorry.
No worries, no worries.
Yeah, just so the E is from, so out of, many one. So it's been on the Great
Out
Seal.
of many ones, right?
Yeah, so it's very old. It's like 1782,
Yes.
and I'm interested because that definitely is a United States cultural
It
reference,
is.
but it came from sort of as you know, the founders of the United States felt themselves very influenced by the ideals of the Roman Republic
Yeah.
and classical Athens and democracy and so on. They were, I mean, there was this idea that had been dropped for 2,500 years, democracy, and then these guys picked it up again. But they wanted to emphasize sort of a continuity from classical Athens and the Roman Republic. I'd love to hear your commentary on why they chose that, but it is a very old notion. That, like, out of many, one.
Yeah. Thank you. And it's like I've learned those things and they're always in the back of my mind, but it always helps to hear it refreshed. But for me, whenever you brought up that question, whenever you brought up that phrase, I thought about it as what we don't know right now is if the hive mind, as it's shown in the series In Pluribus, if it's really like if it's taking everybody and conforming them to its agenda, or if it has or if the mind itself is influenced by every single mind that becomes part of it. So an emergent mind
Right.
versus one that flattens everybody. And so we kind of get a taste that it is kind of emergent because they keep bringing up everybody's memories. Helen remembers this. We remember what this doctor, this brain surgeon can do. We can have Robbie, the child, Lakshmi's son, perform brain surgery. Like it's an emergent thing where everybody we have memories, we can pull those memories, and we only have the information that is in everybody's mind at the time of joining. And so it seems emergent. And so like you inform the entity that you have become. But we're not, I don't know. We don't know about that yet. The show hasn't really fully clarified all of that. But you get layered in. And so unity looks more like enforced harmony instead of like now you have a choir that will all sing perfectly, but what are you sacrificing at that perfection?
Well, I mean, one of the things I sort of kind of thought was amusing, and again, I'm kind of coming from a kind of a Canadian perspective, where, you know, it's like, you know, to me, Carol kind of represents the American ideal, you know, very, you know, frontier, very independent. Whereas many of the other survivors, I mean, there are no other North American or American survivors. Everybody else, almost everybody else is from a more collectivist kind of culture. And whereas Carol's like, you know, okay, we have to save the world. Everyone else are like, they're all getting together and they're going, okay, you know, the hive mind is going to die off because, you know, they can't even, you know, pick fruit or things like that. So they're all getting together trying to figure out how do we save the hive mind, you know, try to save the, you know, the collectivist, the massive collectivist culture. Whereas as the American character is like, you know, we got to break it up. I got to break it up. Or, you know, but also she's also informed by Davey could probably speak to this, you know, by so much American, you know, media and movies and things like that, where, you know, we got to fix this kind of thing. Whereas everybody else is kind of like,
is this not how it's supposed to be? Like,
yes, exactly.
Yeah. I want to, I guess this is because I'm an academic. This is a statement phrased as a question as we often do at conferences. So just on the nature of this hive mind. So Julie, you mentioned the Borg, which is probably the most famous popular culture hive mind, but we've had others, and we've had other media properties that were sort of adjacent to this. When I first started watching this show, I was thinking about in the Firefly movie, Serenity, there's a planet where in order to solve the problems of like war and crime and people not loving each other, they invent a virus. Does that sound familiar? That makes everybody happy and everybody love each other, but they also stop eating, stop taking care of themselves, and they all die out.
Right.
So that's sort of familiar here. So my question is, Julie, you phrased it really well. So there are now something like 7 billion hard drives on planet Earth. Like they're able to tap in and this. My favorite character, actually my hero, Manusos, the Paraguayan, he runs a storage place.
Self-storage place, yeah.
Yes. But he's my hero, and I'll talk about that a little later when that comes up, like conspiracy theorists and like uncovering conspiracies. But he discovers, you know, through really patient conspiracy research, that there's a frequency that we're getting a heavy hint that they're able to talk. The 7 billion hive people are able to talk to each other somehow, like instantly download something. So that suggests a hard drive. And then you raise the question of like, do they have any individuality left, or is it just 7 million memory banks and they have one personality, right? So my question is then, the population of the Earth is now 7 billion, or is the population 14? I forget. I think when the series first started,
seven.
When the series first started, I thought that they would only show us the world through the POV of Carol and then maybe some of the other survivors. But then they did start cutting away to, like, for example, the I don't know how it's pronounced, the Kichwaya Andean girl. I think she's at, you know, that's a good question, but anyway, we cut away to her, just her. I don't know how many scenes we've had with just the hive people talking to each other without any survivor present. I'm not sure there's been any scenes like that, but the point of view is like, we are getting I'm getting to a point here. The question is, is there one personality, but they all have these memory banks that share. And so when Carol is talking to one, or Manusos is talking to one, it's pretty clear they're talking to all of them, right? So there is no distinction between any individual,
right,
whatsoever. Is that your reading?
Yeah, that's what I got. And I specifically, whenever they were watching the train together, the others and Carol, and she talks about it being the loneliest sound. That's also where you get a little bit of the glimpse into they don't know things that are like that have not been told to the hive mind, or that are still part of like inside of Carol. But they talked about that a little bit, saying that they kind of talk through electromagnetic fields. They mentioned something about that.
I'm kind of reminded of way, way back in the early days of the internet. We had, Napster, where, you know, we had all, you know, David was saying about hard drives, you know, almost at some point, a large percentage of internet users had their hard drives all hooked up through Napster, and then you as an individual could find any single song you ever wanted. And there was just this buffet of music out there. Before the internet, you know, David, you remember this, that, you know, if you wanted a song, you had to go buy a CD or an LP, and it cost a lot of money. And your want for songs was always greater than the songs you could afford to buy. And then suddenly, you know, you could have any song you wanted, and you spent like a year downloading everything you wanted. And then at some point you reached a point where you stopped looking for something you wanted, and you kind of started spending a lot of time on Napster looking for something to want. It was a very interesting switch. So, you know, not Carol himself, but like someone said, Kumba, you know, he's now in a position, right, where he can literally have anything he wants. I think he comes from a small, I don't know that, remember the name of the African nation.
Mauritania,
thank you, which I think is kind of hooked around Morocco. So a bit of a French colonial influence there or something. But right. So Kumba can now literally have everything he wants, right? And you know, how long before that gets really boring for him once he's kind of has now experienced everything he wants, you know?
Well, especially when, like, part of the human experience is having stories to share.
Yes.
And then now what happens whenever it's like anybody that's left to talk to is the same person. So you don't.
Yes.
Who are you going to share stories with? They've all done them.
Well, there was a scene where what's Carol's handler / kind of girlfriend? Zosha, right. So Zosha, where she's talking to Carol about keep writing that book. We love that book. Write that book. And like, I'm like, are they just? Well, they can't lie, but are they still kind of like blowing sunshine up her butt?
Yeah.
Or are they really craving something novel? Right. You know.
Right. You
know, yeah.
If you have all of the memories and experiences of everybody that you've absorbed.
Yes.
And you are able to. I assume that the whole bliss aspect of it is because you're able to have all of those experiences and all at once. Like, that's what I'm assuming is why. But if you're having all of that, then yeah, I can see how having something that is not in your database, in your bank, how that's like, you crave that. So, but then why are you trying to absorb them? So, sorry.
No. So just taking the conspiracy aspect of this. Okay. Now, a lot of conspiracy theories involve that a secret cabal is controlling something or is planning to control something, right?
Yeah.
So there no, whether it's the gnomes of Zurich or, you know, some secret conspiracy in the government or the military or what, that they are either, and their goals are power, but sometimes what conspiracy theorists say is that they'll do it through giving us things that we think we want. Like they'll give us peace, but it'll actually be a piece of tyranny and oligarchy and you know, control and things like that. So we have this world now where if you would list the top 10 problems of the human race, you know, war, you know, hatred, things like that. Check, 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 right? We've gone down 1 through 10, but the trade-off is, and this gets to the question about like music, is I don't see any evidence that they enjoy anything at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Except each other whatsoever. I don't think that they, there's none of them sit around and listening to music. And in fact, I'm thinking about that scene where the young native girl converts, you know, she's joined, right, by some sort of the gas there that overcomes her initial immunity.
And they do it through a beautiful ritual. I loved how it was framed.
But typically when you join a cult, right, and there's a ritual for you joining the cult, then the cult gets together and they love bomb you and they tell you you're wonderful. But there, the moment she's joined, everybody just walks off in every direction.
Island.
And this girl's beloved. I'm an animal lover. So I almost cried when I saw this girl abandon her pet goat. And the goat went, bah, you know, like, why are you abandoning me?
Yes.
And to me, talk about existential horror. Can you imagine how many cats and dogs were abandoned by their beloved owners?
That's something I thought about, because they're like, we don't cause harm to animals. And I'm like, is not abandonment, is not neglect causing harm?
How many hamsters and gerbils are dying in their cages? I mean, really, did they all stay and just take? I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Cows, as Carl knows, being in Canada, you know, cows, a lot of domesticated animals, you can't just let them run wild. Yeah. Like cows need to be milked by humans or they die horribly in pain. So there's this hidden horror, and sometimes we're shown it, but I don't think my sense, and we'll talk about this in a minute, a lot of the viewership is not processing that. but to me, this is the most evil conceivable hive mind I've ever seen or ever conceived of. That's why I thought it was interesting when you said Canadian, because I think you're talking about the Canadian of like gentler.
Yeah.
But to me, it's despicable, horrible, and destructive. They can't create anything. Like, there will be no symphonies written. There'll be no works of art. They will need no children born. So we've gone down the checklist of like problems of human Earth, of planet Earth, but like we've created a bunch of new ones, which to me in some ways are more horrible than the old ones.
Yeah. I mean, in that hive mind, there has to be numerous art lovers, right? And but they've just abandoned the Georgia O'Keeffe. Is that Georgia O'Keeffe or something? The Georgia O'Keeffe Museum, and, you know, let Carol take the paintings, and, you know, if she wants to throw a bottle of whiskey at it because she's upset about something, it just doesn't matter to them, right? You know, they have all of humanity, but not, what's the word I'm looking for? Not our many of our desires anymore, or emergent, some of our emergent qualities that love and protect art, even though it's really just pigment on a piece of paper,
My thought was, whenever you made the Canadian comment, was like, not, yes, the politeness, but also maybe like more along the ethical lines. But even then, the ethics are, they get hard to follow, as far as this show goes, because it's like they don't lie, but they can work around the truth.
Yes.
Just like a mythological creature. And so it's unclear on what kind of consent they need, because they can't hurt Carol to get her stem cells, but they can use her previously donated biological waste.
Yeah.
Which I did think was interesting that they referenced was going to come up at the beginning of the episode by focusing in on the chickens a little bit. So I thought that was
fun. I mean, you're coming to the conspiracy thing. One of the criticisms from skeptics of conspiracy theories is that the cranks, they're so certain that the conspirators just hide everything in plain sight, yes, if you know how to interpret all the artwork at the Denver airport, it clearly shows their plan for world domination. And the hive mind does basically hide in the open. I mean, they make it very clear what they're doing in some ways, right? We don't really know. There's speculation they're building maybe a giant antenna in Africa or something to then, pass on to the next planet or something.
Yeah.
But yeah. So are they? They're hiding something in plain sight while Carol is distracted by X. People are not looking at something else.
It's the conspiracy is out there, and the hive, like the others, don't make any kind of show of hiding it.
Right.
That's what I think is interesting. Like, this is what is going to happen, and you are powerless to stop that.
But they don't volunteer. Right.
Yes,
so like they don't say, and by the way, there's a radio frequency in case you're wondering how we. Although, I mean, sometimes I love the show. First of all, let's agree. It's an amazing show.
Yep,
and
yep.
It has amazing high production values. I mean, some of the shots there were, I mean, I don't think that was CGI, that they had a plane made out like Air Force One just roll up, and some of the establishing shots of Albuquerque. And they built a whole neighborhood. I mean, I don't know how many fans know this. Like they actually built that neighborhood from scratch.
Someone find it though, like through Google Maps? Like, it got spoiled because of that.
Oh,
yeah, I think they have to guard it so people don't show up to try to save Carol. But let's go to Manousos for a second, because I keep harping on like how much I like his character. His character is the classic conspiracy theorist, right?
Yes.
He's socially isolated. He believes everybody is in on the conspiracy. He's monomaniacal and meticulous and investigating these little details, but he's 100% right. So it's like a fantasy of every conspiracy theorist is that, you're working in isolation all these years and your brother and your mother don't understand why they won't listen to you about the reptilians.
Right.
And then suddenly the reptilians show up and say, Carl Mamer, he was right all along. And like, oh, I'm so vindicated. Finally, And you sort of wonder whether we're going to get a little bit of origin story that maybe he was a conspiracy theorist before this happened.
That would be interesting.
But he's vindicated completely. And he works so hard at it. I mean, he marches all the way up to, you know, from Paraguay to to Albuquerque, and you would want him on your side. I guess my question is, okay, now we know some of the aspects of the conspiracy. I don't know how many seasons this show is planned for. I haven't read like they're planning
they get
for five
two, at least.
I'm not sure there's enough plot there for five, but two sounds. I hope they just do two, you know, because but so my question is there any controversy about whether they should save the world or not? Because we're left at the end of episode one where Carol, after going the Mauritanian guy's route of like, okay, I'm going to ski and go to the beach and like live the life I've always dreamed of with my new partner. We'll talk about that in a moment there about whether you can interchange that quickly. But she comes back and says, okay, let's save the world. Do you agree with that goal? Do you think somebody in that situation would say, I'm going to try to save the world?
I keep trying to put myself, and I'm sorry if I'm stepping on toes, but I keep trying to put myself in that situation where I can see how all of this is happening in front of me. And I even I turned to my partner while we were doing our first watch through of the show. And I think it was by the fourth show or fourth episode, or like just before they're revealing the human derived, the human derived protein. Just before they reveal that, I turn to my partner and I'm like, you know what? I don't see what the problem here is. But the more I thought about it, it's like there's no way to, of course, it seems good whenever you have individuals that are butt up against that collective mindset. If you only have the collective mindset, you don't get to see that, how any of that can be good. But as far as like the, oh, put me back on track, Dr. Perlmutter, I'm sorry.
Well, I guess I have Carl and I have talked about, you know, there's this long line of research coming out of sociology and going back to his comment about Napster called generational preferences. So when I was growing up, I listened to certain music, like, for example, Bob Seger and Bruce Springsteen. Do you know who those people are? I'm sure. But you know, the research is that you form these affinities of artistic taste in your late teens and 20s, and they pretty much remain rigid. So that if you've listened to Bob Dylan growing up, the reason Bob Dylan is touring right now and making $1 billion, or Paul McCartney comes to Lubbock and makes $1 billion, is because people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s are quite willing to go pay $500 a ticket to relive their youth, right? Mm-hmm. And we have trouble absorbing new culture, especially in music. So this hive mind will never add anything to the collective. Right. I mean, unless Carol or Menousos compose a symphony or paint a piece of art. And by the way, going back to the art, all of that art is going to go away. I mean, if you have no climate control and you just let the museums go, we're going to lose all human art, you know, completely. That's something else to think about. But my question, Julie, as our official ambassador of youth and young people, I have an impression looking at Reddit, Pluribus TV, and other places that there's a considerable group of young people who think all in all, the hive mind, the hive world that's portrayed here doesn't sound too bad compared to the world that they're entering right now. Am I an old man shaking a cane? Please explain this to me.
So I don't know how old you think I am, and I'm not going to make anybody say any numbers, but I'm not that young. I have been out of high school for as long as it took me to get to the end of high school, if that makes sense. I'm 36. But anyway, looking at this, I thought, yes, this seeing a hive mind working in order, but it's like, yes, it looks good. And I feel like a lot of people would agree about that, but it only takes a couple more steps to think about. But that only looks good whenever it's up against somebody who has good intentions for the world directing that hive mind. Like, we don't know what the hive mind's intentions are whenever it doesn't have to appease the people that are unjoined. We don't know what that's going to look like. We know it's not going well, as far as we understand and as far as it has explained to our characters, it will not kill animals, cut grass, pick fruit. But where do we go from here? And we've already seen that, like, yes, Manusos and Carol are proven to be right, because we can see how, like, all of this gets so muddied in what we consider for consent, what we consider for care, what we consider is harm, abuse, neglect. Like, whenever we actually try to define those, this entity is working, however this hive mind is working, it is absolutely figuring out some way to find loopholes through consent. And so ultimately that makes it evil. Carol and Manusos win, but what does that get them? What power does that give them? They have an atomic bomb, but what else, like, what does knowing all of this do for them?
Yes, definitely.
One of the things I really enjoyed was the, you know, when Carol's trying to figure out what the whole milk carton things are about, and then stumbles on the, you know, it's people. I don't know if you ever saw Soylent Green, right? Exactly. So you're waiting for this, you know, with Kumba, you're waiting for this Soylent Green moment, you know. The milk cartons are people. And then, whoom, that just carpet's just pulled right out from under her. And Vince Gilligan or whatever, whoever's the writer or something, just, you know, lets the air out of that balloon right away. I love that. That was so brilliant. And it's like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, this just makes perfect sense that, you know, we can't harm anything, and we just have to use the available resources, which are human bodies. But, you know,
and it's perfectly reasonable.
Exactly. Like, yeah, you know, we're eating Uncle Bob's really body, but Uncle Bob is still here with us, you know?
Yeah. Everything that they do has its internal logic, and it could be reasonable the way they explain it.
Yeah.
Do they actually state that they are working on the problem of, like, feeding themselves?
No.
Because my feeling is we've been using the term hive mind. But one thing about hives is that they replicate, right? Like new bees are born, right?
But yeah.
New ants, new
That's
new
why
termites are born. I think these are salmon.
Right.
But my analogy to salmon is that they somehow, this radio signal, I mean, the steps of this were a little bit iffy to me. Like, I don't believe that that all the nuclear submarines underwater, that somehow they gassed them all at once. That it's just, that's a little stretch there about how they got to planet Earth that quickly. But they seem to be directed towards this goal of replicating the signal to other planets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, my problem with that is that we don't actually know any other planets where there's life. So where are we going? So has a map of the universe been downloaded as well with check marks on all the planets that have radio telescoping life? Then we're going to be sending along. And then I guess once we've achieved that, then we just die off. Right. So this is not a utopia with any continuity. These people will age. If they don't starve to death, they'll age or there'll be accidents and then they'll die. And we'll, I guess it'll be Chernobyl world where, you know, the animals live happily without humans.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess the Earth will be a paradise at that point. But by the way, that is, of course, what a lot of conspiracy theorists think the ultimate plan is, right? For
population reduction.
Yeah.
I mean, a whole lot of conspiracy theories are posited around the idea of reducing the world population from, like, you know, 7-8 billion people to, I think it's 500 million is the figure they toss out.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's like as if somehow this is
magic number.
Yeah. No, I've never been able to figure out where they got that number from, other than maybe some misreading of like the a Club of Rome publication or something, Limits to Growth or something. But yeah, 500 million people is the conspiracy these people believe in, you know, that the ultimate goal is population reduction. So yeah. But right, the hive mind, there's no indication they have any interest in procreating, right? That you know, the hive mind, people are going to starve, and then, you know, then some people will still be alive and be able to consume all of the bodies.
But has it been stated that they don't procreate? Like, is that a rule that has been set by the show?
Nothing has indicated whether or not they do or they don't. I'm suspecting they don't procreate. That the really the goal is to
The goal is to replicate, but replicate like evolution programs creatures to replicate, right? The first, what is it called? The last common universal ancestor, Lakua, was some cell that started replicating. And so all human beings have, I mean, all life has some, you know, programming to replicate, but their replication is planetary wide. The individual and by individual, like the individual planet doesn't matter. So if you think about this, this is the greatest this in giant, like large conspiracy imaginable, where somebody somewhere said, we want to exterminate all life in the entire universe. That's the conspiracy, to exterminate all life in the universe eventually, with the key word being eventually.
Yeah.
Because there's no other possible outcome. Yeah.
That's a good point. I mean, there's the was it the Fermi paradox? Like, where are they? And there's this idea of, like, you know, you should be able to kind of build, some civilizations should have come up with the idea to build a satellite, some sort of probe that goes to another planet. And all what it does is it makes copies of itself and then sends the probe to the next planet and makes copies of itself and then the next planet. And then within a few hundred thousand years, the whole entire galaxy should be fully populated by these self-replicating probes. And in terms of AI as well, there's kind of the idea of, like, you build a self-replicating AI that has the ultimate goal of making window frames. And that's all it wants to do, make window frames. But it It takes that to the ultimate level that it needs to now convert, the planet into raw material to make window frames and reproduce itself to create more robots that make window frames. And it's this never-ending chain of self-replicating robots that are trying to do this very, very mundane task that actually just destroys the planet, robots trying to reduce everything to raw materials to create more window
That was a
frames.
plot in the original Stargate series. The master villains there were the replicators. That's all they did. They just ingested things and replicated themselves. And eventually they were going to take up the whole universe. But so, Juliet, I'm sorry for asking this again, but I just, do you think that there, because as long as these people live, I'm not sure I want to classify them as having being happy, but they, but when in that scene in like I think it was the high school gym or something, where they're all just lying together and cuddling, I guess with obviously total strangers, it wasn't like,
Oh,
yeah, so yeah, is that the official term?
cuddle.
But and there was no evidence that they were cuddling with members of their family pre-event, right? They were just like total strangers
Right. Yeah,
being
I
nice to
thought
each
that
other.
was an interesting detail to show in that shot that they some of the bodies were cuddling with each other, actively like holding each other, and I thought that was interesting. Like, if you're all a connected mind, like, and it's all about efficiency, then what's the point in that? Like, I don't know. I thought that was an interesting little take, a little detail to drop in there.
In the movie I, Robot, I forgot whether this was the story. That was something about robots. I don't know if you saw that, but like when robots were abandoned and just left in a storage area, they sort of started congregating closer to each other to be next to something else. So I think that's where that came from.
I like that.
So my essentialist question here is like, okay, we have a conspiracy. The conspiracy theorists, to some extent, Carol, but definitely Manousos, have it didn't take them much to uncover the conspiracy. I mean, obviously, Manousos, in his own way, his monomaniacal way, he uncovered key aspects of the conspiracy. This radio frequency answered an important question, like how is somebody in Bolivia and somebody in Pakistan downloading how to be a neurosurgeon, just like that, right? Okay, so although I how the human brain receives a radio signal, that's got to be explained to me. But do you think that this is one of those because a lot of conspiracy theories, as Carl has uncovered over the years, are saying that people are trying to create a dystopia, right? A bad thing. But in this conspiracy theory, at 99 point to the many ninths population of the Earth think that they're happy, that this is a good situation. And there's only so far n equals two of people who now think, yeah, this is really bad. We've got to change it.
Wait, reframe that question. Say
Yeah,
that.
so
I'm
I'm just
sorry.
who's in the right here?
Who
I
is in
mean,
the right?
do you think the show is telling us who's in the right, or is
I
it
don't think it
asking
is.
us?
I think the show is purposefully making this like really hard to tell. I think ultimately it is going to lead us down to like individuality is an important gift and how things can work and it's how physics can work because all of the hive mind, the way that it is working, you run into a lot of metaphors there for consumerism and entropy and things can only grow to a certain point before they collapse in on themselves. But as far as the I got myself off track. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Do you mind helping me get back
Well,
on?
let me jump in there.
Sure.
People will look at this as the hive mind is, yeah, we're talking about utopia, right? Creating, for some that's a utopia, right? Especially maybe the younger generation where they're really afraid of the future and things like that would, just find, the warm embrace of the hive mind that, as utopia. But utopia was clearly a pun on, right, no place, right? That
Yeah.
ultimately, there, I did a whole thing about utopias, and no one has ever created a real utopia. That they start off kind of with the inklings of a good idea, but just collapse really, really quickly. And sort of like the self-help industry, no one has ever been able to create a self-help book that helps more than maybe a handful of people. Why isn't there, after generations and dozens of self-help books on the shelves, someone's ever come up with the one, we all just buy this one, we read it, and we have been self-helped, right? So is ultimately the hive mind really a kind of a play on, the utopia actually being no place?
Yeah.
The show. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Oh no, go ahead. Go ahead.
I keep asking these questions about why the show includes something, which is always an interesting topic, but then why it excludes something. Like, for example, no one, to my knowledge, has brought up religion. Like, I would think. Some people would say, like, oh, so utopia, I mean, like the John Lennon song, Imagine, Imagine No Religion. I mean, it would be a pretty controversial thing if a character said, and part of our utopia is there's no religion. I mean, Apple would get some letters on that one. But apparently that's just taken as a given. None of the characters so far that we've met apparently were religious people before, because nobody's brought this up.
But we
Well,
still
but
have
Manus,
ritual.
oh, go ahead. I was going to say Manusis. I mean, there's a scene where he's shown sleeping in a church, and
Yeah.
it seemed, I mean, it seemed to me he was doing something rather reverentially, and he does have this strange ethical system where he keeps leaving money and IOUs and
Well,
things like that.
he called what happened with the hive mind a demonic possession.
Yes.
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 And so that's as much religion as we have brought into the show. And it's kind of great because I think it's interesting that you brought it up. I wonder if I didn't think about it because I'm just not I'm a spiritual person, but I'm just not a particularly religious person. So people not talking about religion never really occurred to me. And then whenever they did finally bring in that aspect, that they're possessed by demons, I did like that it was a little bit of a jolt in the show. It kind of brought back a more folklore side to it instead of just a sci-fi side.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, anybody that obviously was religious, especially in kind of a Christian tradition, would see as being, this is, an apocalypse, or these are demons, something like that. Like
I mean, any
where,
religion. I mean, I think, Buddhists and Muslims
right.
and Jews and Hindus and Zoroastrians would find it problematic that, so they don't exist either. Right? In
Yes.
fact, we're told that one of the survivors or non-joined was a Muslim prayer singer. I think whether he was actually an imam or he
Okay.
Was
Oh,
a
yeah.
singer. Yeah. So, I mean, what does he think about this? We haven't met him yet, I believe, right?
Mm-mm.
But it's like the you know, this is not the apocalypse you're looking for, that the people who have very fixed ideas about the end of the world, and you know, there will be trumpets and clouds will part, and it's like, this isn't, how do I rectify this clearly the end of the world with how I have long been taught what the end of the world will look like. People have kind of a sort of a religious, especially a sort of a Christian bent, but yeah, they're demons. Well, they cannot be saved. I don't know.
I wonder what it was like for those who were joined in that moment of like that seizure. Maybe they did experience that, and it was their religious experience. And I don't know. We don't know. They don't talk about that part. It'd be interesting to address, but Apple would get a lot of angry letters.
Julie, you also brought up the issue of consent. Some notes that I guess as part of the conspiracy theory. So we have the Mauritanian character who is living the high life. I mean, his dream, he's James Bond in a casino in Las Vegas, and he has people play acting that he's James Bond. He apparently has a group of women that he, there, which,
one.
Yeah, which Carol disapproved of, but then can these people want to please, so they can't legally they can't give, you can't give consent if it's not possible to say no, right?
Right.
If you're not allowed to say no. So Carol is sort of doing what the Mauritanian guy did, but with just one person. I felt really uncomfortable at that. I also felt uncomfortable, like, let's rewind here. Whatever happened killed her partner.
Yes.
That she loved. And chronologically, I don't know how many weeks later, she's taking up with somebody else who is a member of the hive mind. And I'm going, like, really? Somebody would recover from the death of their beloved partner in a couple of weeks and embrace the murderer?
Right. Well, I guess for Carol, it gets a little bit easier to start blending in the fantasy where she
Raban.
Gets to, Raban. she gets to, she blames the hive mind for Helen's death, but she starts dissociating Zosia, and keeps forgetting that Zosia is the hive mind, even to the point where that she's like trying to ask Zosia to let her fall into that fantasy by referring to herself as I instead of we. I thought that was fun that it wasn't, she claimed it was for her comfort, but I think it was more to fall further into fantasy to make this more palatable. But she's, I don't know how, I think she's able to kind of explain away that association with Helen's death until she can't anymore. And she remembers whenever she's basically told that she will be forced to join, whether she wants to or not. And again, consent comes in. Carol thought that she had that option of consent, and she apparently doesn't. And I'm still confused on how they do consent, because I thought that they asked Kusumaya at the beginning if she still wanted to go through with it. And so can they say no? But it made it sound like it was inevitable. And I mean, this is a virus. Didn't it call itself a virus? But it's a virus. So of course it's going to take over. It's going to continue to replicate. That's in its nature. But I don't know. There's many fun things there.
All right.
Carl, in the conspiracy aspect of this,
Right.
A lot of conspiracy theories going on what Julie just said, that the idea is that the conspirators have volition, right? Like they're evil, and they're planning to do evil. Mm-hmm. Not that they're completely ignorant and they're helpless tools. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I guess in conspiracy theories, people will say, oh, yeah, the reason people don't talk about this is because they're threatened, or, you know, they're not aware of like the bosses that are behind them. So there is some excuse for like lower level functionaries of the conspiracy, right? Yeah. But the central players in a conspiracy are supposed to be like conscious players in the conspiracy. Yeah. But here we have a conspiracy where there are no conspirators present. We don't know there's any Borg queen, going back to what Julia started out with, the Borg, right? But Julia, do you sense that might be a reveal, is that there's a Borg queen out there somewhere?
That's what I'm curious about. Like, is this thing its own one and own entity, or is this like, is it getting instructions? Is it going to be able to convey that to us before it assimilates everybody? Because at that point, it won't need to, like, express the plan. It won't need a monologue if it's already assimilated everybody.
All right. Well, I have a theory there. So, yeah, sorry. Sort of earlier in my email, I sort of, like, wanted to know, like, what are kind of two theories you had, one that has already been you were wrong about and one that you are still hoping will come true? Just to briefly, you know, Manusus, I thought that he was not infected. That I thought he had just some of the billions of people had been right place, right time, and avoided being infected. And because he is gated community, he wasn't letting anybody in. He was never eating the food, and so it would sort of play out, you know, that he was. And then Carol would have to be very careful with him and stuff like that. But no, it does appear that he was infected. But all right, so Kumba, right? Now, I think Vince Gilligan sometimes plays with our biases and something, but something else is going on. So like when Manusus was scanning the dial, a lot of people just assumed he was trying to listen to the survivors, not thinking he was trying to find the transmission, right? So I think Kumba can go one of two ways. One, Kumba isn't somebody who has immune. Kumba is the hive queen. And he, you know, he is so stereotypically the swarthy guy who wants to, you know, so he's hiding behind that stereotype, you know.
He's the Bond supervillain.
Exactly. He's just so simple-minded, you discount him. So that's my one theory. My other one is, if you're on this other planet, and you're one of the few last survivors, and you know this transmission is going to be shot to another planet, do you, at the last moment, can you put something, some little Trojan, in the code so when it gets to the other planet, there's one person that is now the savior? So I don't know if you ever saw the David Bowie movie, The Man Who Fell to Earth. It's about this alien that comes to Earth to save his home planet, but he becomes so seduced by all the pleasures on Earth, he kind of forgets that it's what it's supposed to do there. He becomes a drunk and becomes involved with a lot of women, stuff like that. So maybe, you know, Manusus is the plant to save, you know, we can't save ourselves, but we can put a savior in the code.
I'm sorry, not Manusos.
Kumba. Sorry, yeah, Kumba. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So it is confusing sometimes.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything ends in an A or something. So yeah, so Kumba is the savior plant that was put into the code. Because he's doing something very weird at that end with Carol. He's like mimicking everything she does. So is he kind of just this really this alien mind that is trying to learn? I don't know. So that's my it could go either way, but I feel like there's something more to him than really we're being led to believe, because he so easily falls into our stereotypes of the swarthy foreigner suddenly, you know, in Vegas and, now with like, very atomically very blessed women surrounded by them, you know, that kind of thing, you know, sort of, you know, women and their considerables, and he's very, you know, yeah. So
playboy life.
Exactly. So to me, that's a front to play with our stereotypes to hide something.
So why go through all of the show of playing like that, playing like he's in a Bond movie?
Yeah.
For no, I guess if he is the Hive Queen, then he's making everybody else be puppets.
Exactly. Well, again, that's where the idea of like the man who fell to Earth, that he's also being seduced by, you know, the previous planet may not have had quite the carnal pleasures and the sensual pleasures, the food.
Well,
and
we're
the,
told, right, that it's a water planet. I don't know how you build a radio telescope if you're an ocean planet, but there's yes. some, I mean, maybe they're going back to conspiracy theories. So I think this is a great show, because when I start going in one direction of what's going to happen, the show goes in another direction. So like that's a sign of a good show. Like you can't necessarily predict which way the plot is going. They've set up some contradictions and some alleyways, and I hope they resolve them, but they haven't gone in the exact expected direction. One thing I wondered was, okay, is it really just a radio signal that I trust Vince Gilligan. I never saw Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul, but like the reputation of the series was that he didn't go for the cheap laugh. He didn't go for the cheap expectation. Mm-hmm. So the idea that like, okay, in season 2, episode 1, an alien mothership will show up.
Right, yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, they're clearly signaling that at some point they're going to grab an infected and stick him in a Faraday cage, right? That's kind of obvious. Like, what happens even when you stick one of those people in a Faraday cage, you know, which is, you know, a kind of a cage where no radio waves can kind of get in. So, you know, what happens then if you cut them off from the carrier wave or something?
From the hive.
Exactly. Do they return to who they are, or do they die?
The virus was separate than the carrier wave, right?
Yes. But it's how they're so that wave that Manusos was playing with was how they're talking to each other, and then the carrier wave was just the RNA sequence.
Yeah. So, and the atom bomb or the atomic bomb, I mean, clearly, again, that's maybe they're going to use it to create an EMP, right? So they can very, you know, over a very wide area, disrupt a lot more of the signal, you know. So, I mean, I'm probably going to play
if they could find where the signal is. I mean, I'm assuming that's going to be a plot point, is like, okay, where's this signal coming from? Is it like one radio station in Toronto that's, you know?
Exactly. Now we're bringing in, right, they live, John, Roddy Piper's They Live, right, where they had to go blow up the radio station that was sort of broadcasting the signal that kept normal people from not seeing the space aliens and the
I had a question for both of you. Is this our planet? Is this our timeline, our Earth? Because I felt that there were certain things which were missing. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, like Carol uses a cell phone, but like the entire world of social media and media are like just not there anymore. I mean, there just seems like there's these components of our civilization, like religion, like social media, like, I mean, she turns on a television set. Like, I thought that was odd, actually. Most people today, oh, there's something going on. I think I'll go on Reddit and see. I mean, turning on a TV is a very 1960s gesture there, right? In fact, I thought, wouldn't it be, I thought there was a missing scene where she goes on Facebook and on her Facebook says, because she's a little bit older, she goes on Facebook and she puts like, what's going on? And like 50,000 people say, Carol, we love you. You know, all the comments are Carol, we love you.
A billion notifications.
Yeah. Are we absolutely sure that this is our planet and our timeline?
Or is it all, there was that show, Newhart, Bob Newhart, very fairly long running sitcom. And then the final show, it ends and he wakes up in bed with his wife from his Bob Newhart's previous TV series. And then it's like explaining that whole series away. It was just a dream kind of thing. Right. So is this, you know,
there's no way that, I mean, I think Apple, there would be mobs descending on Apple headquarters with torches and pitchforks if she woke up and this was a dream, right, Julie? I mean, no one would accept that ending in 2020. I should say that, but like a new film just came out from Apple. I won't say which one, which actually that the plot. You all remember there was was it Ambrose Beard short story that became a Twilight Zone episode, Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, where a man is scheduled to be hanged. And when he's hanged, the rope breaks and he escapes and he meets a woman and he falls in love and he has all of these things. And then suddenly he wakes up again and he's dropping. All of this was his imagination while he was dropping on a rope to be hanged. So I think if we find out that like it's actually Carol who had a seizure in the parking lot of the bar and the whole series, I think the internet would crash at that point.
Yes. Well, I mean, you talked about how many seasons could this go? And I remember Lost.
Too many.
The series Lost. There was a really great Bilbo Baggins in Lord of the Rings. He kind of has this great line about, you know, the ring net prolongs his life. And he tells Gandalf at some point, he's feeling like too little butter spread over too much bread. And I felt that was the problem with Lost, that they had like a 2-3 season idea that once it went, it just, went really, nuclear, that now, God, we got to keep this going for 5, 7, 10, which was very common back then in terms of TV series. Like this could go on for 10 years and we don't care because, now, reruns are very important sometimes to network television. You need the ultimate goal for network television is when you then sell it as a rerun package that, TV 50 can now run one episode every day, at 7 p.m. for an entire year. For they have to start from the very beginning. Like this is the kind of the ultimate goal for network television for looking at for their rerun package or something. So yes. So
driving series into the ground is unfortunately so common with streaming now.
Yes.
That it's taking a big gamble to go more. I mean, I think they have two, my theory is that they have two seasons of plot. I sure hope Vince Gilligan agrees with you. I haven't talked to him about it, but going just, I guess we may be wrapping up, just from my end, I think that this is a perfect conspiracy theory show in that it has all of these elements of what 1,000 conspiracy theories have had of like the dark forces, the secret things going on, the behind the scenes, the appearance of utopia when it's actually dystopia, the population. Yeah. I mean, it's like it went down a checklist.
Yeah.
Carl has written two books about based on this show and some of the work he's done before about sort of the history of conspiracy theories and different kinds of conspiracy theories. And Carl, I don't think there's any conspiracy element left out, is there?
Yeah, I mean,
this show.
Well, I mean, that's the thing that I mean, there's a whole almost, cottage industry of trying to figure out all the different kind of TV shows and books that this could be based on. Like we saw like Soylent Green and, the alien invasion and the Andromeda Strain and the zombie apocalypse. And it's all just, Vince Gilligan is kind of borrowed from everything and kind of put it into one show. And you're when you really kind of sit down and think about it, your head starts to sort of spin, like, how much of this is an alien invasion? How much of this is, Illuminati? How much is this is just a commentary on American society versus, sort of Asian collectivist, societies, that kind of stuff. Sorry, my wife is from Singapore, and she's always like, Carl, you're too much of an individual. You don't understand. I come from a more collectivist society, and this is where we really butt heads, And so, I can kind of see the show from that perspective. I'm grumpy little Carol. And,
Maybe we can end on that. Who do you identify most on this show, Julie?
Oh, man.
Identify with?
I don't want to be the hive mind, but I feel like I'm the hive mind, unfortunately.
Oh, very interesting. Okay.
Carl?
I'm going Kumba because, from the Napster days, as we're sort of talking about, if he's just really just who we're led to believe he is, just the kind of a guy who suddenly gets to experience all the pleasures without limit in life, I just feel like maybe that would be me. I would be like, as I was with Napster, just downloading all the music I ever wanted. I'm going to try everything and then eventually hit a brick wall.
Yeah, I want to give a complicated answer to my own question. Right. I'm sorry about this. But so I was just having this discussion. There's a Hallmark movie, which is one of their few Hanukkah movies. They do occasionally a Hanukkah movie instead of a Christmas movie. They did a Hanukkah movie called Round and Round, which is a play on Groundhog Day. In this, this woman is going to her parents' house to celebrate Hanukkah, and she gets into a time loop. But they do something very clever, which is she gets into a time loop. She realizes, just like in Groundhog Day, Bill Murray, she realizes she's in the time loop. But she talks to her love interest, who has these buddies who work at a comic book store. And she just once tells them, I think I'm in a time loop. And they go, that's fantastic. We've been waiting for this for years. We've planned all this out. Here's what we're going to do. She doesn't have to try to convince them. They immediately believe her, right? Because there's a problem in a lot of these shows. Like, man, there's Walking Dead. Huh, I guess I'll have to figure out from scratch how to deal with them because I've never watched a zombie show before. I've never watched a zoo. We always have to pretend that this is the first time this has happened. Whereas the fact is we live in a culture now where any one of our undergraduate students, Julie, is completely prepared for time loops, is completely prepared for alien invasions, is completely prepared for everything because they've seen 500 movies on this topic. So my answer is I wish I could be Manousos. Like, I admire him, his single-mindedness. I'd like to think the scientist, because I identify as a social scientist, I would go like, how could they all be communicating? Okay, I'm going to go down that radio spectrum, all 60,000, possible channels and do that. I do, however, think I'm the baby goat.
You have been this baby goat?
Yes, I identify with the baby goat because I think the crushing sense of abandonment
That was
you know that that like
right.
all the people I love, all the people I work with, all the people I admire, all the people I have connections with, including the both of you, they've all abandoned me.
Right.
Right. So I think that baby goat is
right.
the most important character in the show, in some ways, because he sort of he or she typifies what's
right.
actually happened.
Right.
Is that the human race has abandoned everything that made
right.
us human.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, then. Well, on that almost depressing, sad note, thank you for reminding us again of the baby goat. we should wrap up. Dogs at the door trying to like pay attention to me. I don't know if you can hear it in the background there, but yeah. All right. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Julie. It was an absolute pleasure having you on. I'm so glad. I haven't done a more than two people in a long, long, long time. So this was kind of fun. And David, you have done well as my deputy co-host. So let's try and think of some other co-hosting opportunities.
Absolutely. We'll form our own hive.
Exactly. All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.
Destruction waiting for us.